Jeff, obviously a very familiar face to our organization, has done a great job impacting our hitters at the development landscape, has a great deal of familiarity with a number of the players who are at the major league level, and was really a natural fit for us. He's very familiar with Troy as well, and Troy comes extremely well recommended, a guy we were very excited to be able to access, bring into the organization. And Kai comes to us as really one of the best defensive coaching minds in the game. Someone who has established a reputation from people he's worked with, players he's coached repeatedly, as innovative, who can really move teams and organizations forward on that side of the ball. And so we're ecstatic to be able to add all of those guys to our staff.
Who's your center fielder?
Who's our center fielder?
Yeah.
I think we have a couple of options. I think Tyrone Taylor has proven he can play out there at a high level defensively. Carson Bench is going to come into spring training with a chance to make our team. And we'll see where the offseason takes us beyond that.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Wednesday, November the 12th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, and go to the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You could sign up for premium content, less than a cup of coffee a month, free chat over at our newsletter, updates to the show, interactions, all the things you need to be part of the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Well, welcome to this short edition here on this Wednesday morning of the Talking Mets podcast. Appropriate time to come to all of you as David Stearns, for the first time since the end of the season postmortem, spoke to the media. And we've been spending the last 6 weeks doing a lot of speculation from, quite honestly, a postmortem press conference that gave you a few nuggets, but you could tell it was Stearns just trying to do his mea culpa, Cohen doing his apology, apologizing for the season, giving the media reason to believe they care as if we didn't know. And the only thing that we gleaned from that, and again, when it comes to Stearns and the media, he doesn't lay out the blueprint, but he usually gives you some things to chew on. You just got to listen. And he did that again yesterday. Although I will say, I feel like he firewalled and gave a little bit of word salad on a couple of things, particularly the free agents. But at the end of the season, he talked about run prevention. He talked about the coaching staff. And the first thing that he's done, and I know that it's not official with the pitching coach, but the Mets have upgraded their coaching staff. He addressed that yesterday. And he talked about run prevention. And he addressed that again a little bit yesterday as well. So these press conferences give you some nuggets. So going into yesterday, you heard a couple of the comments coming in. Let's start off with what everybody's been talking about, Edwin Diaz and Pete Alonso. And the idea, and whether or not that was word salad the way that Stearns addressed it or not, is a whole separate conversation, because I felt it wasn't very clear when Alonso and Diaz were brought up. He didn't tell you anything that made you think, hey, we're not in on it. And sometimes when a GM is not in on a player, they'll say complimentary things and they'll give you enough to say, hey, we'll see what happens. He was pretty clear that they want him back. And as you get closer and closer to the winter meetings, and as now that the season is over, and every media member has educated speculation. There's more educated speculation out there than anything. Talking to scouts, talking to front office personnel from other teams. Very rarely, especially with the Mets, do you get it from the horse's mouth. That's one of the few times that you did. It was yesterday. So Stearns says they like both these guys. They want them back. But what you're hearing is they will only get them back and accept them back at a fair price. Now, sometimes people feel that's an under market value. I don't believe that. I think one of the things you're hearing about Alonso is that post 2030, post 5 years, that's a bit of a problem for both Stearns and Steve Cohen. I agree with that. If Boris is able to get a 7-year deal, something crazy from a Boston or Chicago or whomever wants to get in on that, he probably will have to pause on Alonso. Same thing with Diaz. Diaz after 4 years. Diaz even at 4 years could be a stretch. We talked about this a lot over the last month. Two-pitch pitcher, closer, not heavy, heavy usage. And maybe the fact that he had a year off to injury preserved his arm a little bit in a crazy way where now you feel a little bit better about going out there and giving him that extra year. But I think if anybody wants Diaz and blows him away 5 years, 5 years plus an option, you know, somebody really wants a closer. Let's say the Dodgers. A lot of people feel the Dodgers might get stupid with Diaz. Well, maybe then one or both will be gone. I still think it's very likely Diaz will be back and be back soon. And I'm not so sure that Alonso is going to get a 7-year deal to get blown away on the market. But Stearns talked about wanting them back. And let's assume that the Mets could get a deal done. And let's face it, with the kind of money that Steve Cohen has and the fact that the Mets already today, and I looked it up, already today with some projections on arbitration are at $240 million-ish dollars on their payroll. And they're a fifth-time payer, so they're going to pay 110% tax on anything above 304. They're going to blow past 304. There's no way they're going to be able to be under the competitive balance tax unless they want to rip the thing apart or, you know, not sign anybody, go completely young. They're not there yet. That's not something the Mets are going to do. I know there was some leaks about the Mets losing over $300 million. Bob Nightingale, who loves, you know, kicking the hornet's nests with the fans and reporting on things that, quite honestly, when you start to hear about teams losing money and all that stuff from owners' meetings, that's all stuff leaked to the media to help them with collective bargaining negotiations next year. I don't want to get into, you know, losses and accounting and all that other stuff. So that's not what this is about. So we know that Stearns, as we should have known, wants these two guys back. The idea that he doesn't like a closer, that he doesn't like Alonso because of his defense, that was always foolish. You can't just assume because he did things a certain way in Milwaukee under a certain payroll with a certain owner and a certain time in his life that he's going to do it the same way. Of course, and both Cohen and Stearns, if this report is true, are correct. There has to be a limit to how much you'll give these guys. Pete's agent and Diaz's agent know the popularity of the players. They know the pressure that Stearns and Cohen are under. They know the market. And they also know what their players could bring on the field. So why not push for more? You never know. You get a team that's desperate. You got a rich owner. An owner that likes both these players, particularly Diaz. I know there's a connection there. So you got to factor all that in. But the Mets have to have their limits, and I think they will. And I'm not so sure the market will push them to a point where they have to walk away. But it sounds like they will, and that's okay too. That's a conversation for another time. Now, one of the biggest misperceptions from the end of the season press conference, and you got some clarity yesterday, was, hey, Stearns is going to get rid of anybody on the team that's bad defensively. And I keep telling all you guys, defense is not a binary black and white thing across the entire diamond. Defense up the middle, catcher, shortstop, second base, center field, vastly more important than both corners and both corner outfield spots. Now, you don't want butchers, and I get criticized all the time for bringing up names like Dick Stewart at first base. I'll bring up a little bit more of a contemporary butcher in the field, and that's Glenn Allen Hill. Go look him up. Not that, I mean, he's still 25 years old. There's a butcher. There's somebody in the field. Todd Hundley as an outfielder playing left field, catcher playing the outfield. Hey, there you go. There's a butcher in the outfield. You don't want that. And, you know, if you have more contemporary, and for those who criticize me for my comparisons, if you have more contemporary ones, throw them my way. I'll add them to the queue, and I'll use them next time, all right? That's what you do. So that's, you know, defense is not equal everywhere. And I think you could survive with an Alonso defense at first. And to a certain degree, you could survive in the corners a little bit with less than Gold Glove defense. But up the middle, you can't. Now, one of the things that Stearns brought up, and this is earlier in the offseason when people asked me my opinion on coaches, I said, look, I don't know. Nobody knows. And I always say coaches are a little overrated because it's about having good players. But I do understand what a lot of young players and an organizational philosophy and the way the game has become so information and data driven, maybe I've understated their importance. What I do know is this. Stearns put a ton of burden on these guys to help improve the team. Because I get the feeling, listening to him, there's a very strong possibility. I'm not saying they're not going to make any moves. I didn't say that. But when we spoke to our good friend Pat Ragazzo at SI on Sunday, we talked about the possibility of running it back with some of the young players and not going bananas in the trade market, maybe making some reasonable free agent acquisitions on the pitching side, but offensively maybe pulling back a little bit and saying, hey, I still think I have something here with Vientos, with Beatty, with Alvarez. I've got a Carson Benj and potentially a Jet Williams coming up. How much does he want to put stock in those guys helping next year, and are they long-term solutions? And when you hear Stearns talk about Troy Snitker, Jeff Albert, Kai Correa, and I know that the pitching coach they haven't talked about, but Justin Willard reportedly, this hotshot kid from the Red Sox organization, he might be next to be announced. All of these guys are young. All of them are analytically inclined. It's a different type of voice. Albert's been with the organization now for 3 or 4 years. The Mets seem to believe, and there is some proof, whether it be Alvarez, Beatty, a lot of these guys, a lot of these kids, Mauricio, on and on and on. When they go down to the minor leagues, they come back better. And that's been a big, and that was essentially why the coaches were purged. A lot of these guys did not get better at the big league level. In a lot of ways, they got worse, and their confidence was shot. Now, my criticism has been on the player, on the makeup, on how good that player is. But, you know, the Mets internally, they see things that we don't see. There's only so much access we have. They're bringing in a Troy Snitker, a guy with a great baseball background. You know, his father, longtime employee of the Braves, great Braves manager, mid-30s, has success with a championship-level club in Houston. You know, someone like Albert, proven track record using analytics. He's been comfortable working with these players across the organization. He's going to put the whole organizational philosophy out there. Snitker's the hitting coach, but Albert is almost the CEO of hitting. Kai Correa, who Stearns talked a lot about, has a lot of solid reputation for in-game management and defense across the game. One of the big criticisms of the Mets was Mendoza's in-game management. Maybe he didn't get the kind of support from an old-school mind like John Gibbons that he needs. Maybe Kai Correa could help with that. Obviously, Stearns believes across the board, the current group of players with the proper coaching support, and he talked about that in the post-game 162 press conference, with proper coaching support, the current group of players can get better defensively. And he talked about that yesterday. So there's a strong sign when you hear that he wants to run it back with a good group of these guys. And remember, with a $240 million payroll currently, and players like Sean Manaea, Brandon Nimmo, Frankie Montas, probably not tradable. Nimmo, not because somebody wouldn't want him, because he has a no-trade clause. You've got $62 million tied up in Soto. You've got $33 million tied up in Lindor. Almost a third, a little less than a third to the competitive balance tax is tied up in two players. Running a sports team, building a roster, especially when stars are getting those kind of percentages of the payroll, it's really tough. And part of that is investing in young, controllable, homegrown talent. And just because you have a bad 3 months and the fans don't want to see these guys and the fans want to win the offseason, the fans want to change, doesn't mean that you listen to them. And it doesn't mean that that's the right move. Now, it's not the sexy move. And it's not a move that's going to make you happy. And it's a move that's going to bring a lot of questions about the team. And sure, they're not going to be picked to win the division next year going into the season if they go that route. You know, Stearns is going to be on the griddle from the media, from the fans, from day one. I think he's pretty much the rest of his tenure, unless they win a championship and he builds back that equity that he rightfully won during the OMG summer of 2024. He's going to be viewed that way. And anytime he doesn't spend money, even though the payroll is going to be, and the Mets are going to invest 90% of their revenues reportedly back into payroll, the payroll is at a point where very few teams are at, he's still going to get that penny-pinching moniker because of what happened or what his reputation has been in Milwaukee. Now, you talk about improving the defense, got a little bit about the coaches, hearing a little bit more of the coaches. Now, the status quo part comes with talking about seeing what kind of player Mark Vientos is. It sounded like Mark Vientos, who's a guy that you're probably going to be selling low right now, and a guy that I still have concerns that because he's a hitter, because he's a DH, and he's a streak hitter, and he's a hitter that I still think profiles as a bottom of the order seventh hitter, a guy that can hit 30 bombs, 25 bombs, driving 80 runs, streak hitter, bottom of the order, probably going to struggle against some really good pitching. I'm not so sure there's value. The defense stinks. He's, for the most part, outside of his run in 2024, he's been a negative WAR player. Part of that has been his defense, but a big part of that has been his inconsistencies on offense. But they saw in 111 games in 2024, a guy that hit 27 home runs, a guy that had an 837 OPS, a guy who had a 134 OPS plus, and a guy, and maybe this is the part that really tickled their fancy, who had almost 1,000 OPS and hit 5 home runs in a postseason run against good pitching in the Phillies and the Dodgers. So, you know, keep that in mind. They saw that. They saw that he hit in a big way at an elite level in the biggest fishbowl that you could possibly have as a professional player in New York in the postseason. So they're talking about giving Vientos another shot. The coaching on both sides of the ball should help with that. Brett Beatty, who we've become a little bit bullish, myself included on, gets a lot more reps at third base. Maybe, and give the guy credit, came in, put his time in at second, and not that he didn't do a good job, he did a solid job there, but moving him back and forth, second base is a much more nuanced position with the double plays and things like that, range and what have you. Putting him at third, a position that he's become, I don't want to say he's a gold glover, but he's above average, and maybe he has the makings of someone who could start having a gold glove conversation down the road. His bat was much more solid down the stretch. I think they missed him a lot. I talked about this a couple of times, that last series in Miami. Beatty's going to get a chance to run it back. Again, coaching on both sides of the ball plays into that. He didn't talk about Alvarez, at least I didn't hear it. I would put Alvarez into that conversation as well, so you have that. And then, you know, what's interesting, and I don't want to get into mailbags, but, you know, there's been some mailbags on Kodai Senga. There was some talk about Senga, you know, being a trade candidate. And look, you guys know one of the most controversial shows that I did this past season is when I had finally had enough about Senga and I flipped out. I think it was after his outing against the Marlins at home on a Sunday afternoon. I just had enough between the blaming of Pete Alonso for his injuries, the constant maintenance, the six-man rotation. And I think what really, really was the cherry on top of the season is when they were talking about how hot it was during his throwing session in Miami. And I'm like, well, if it's too hot in Miami for you to pitch, then when can you pitch? And I think this is a critical year for Senga. I think he lost a lot of goodwill with the fans. I think even when he was good, the underlying metrics indicated he was well over-indexed from a standpoint of results. He's got an elite pitch in the Ghost Fork. He's got to get ahead for it to be effective. The Mets essentially are going to need a six-man rotation with him in it. And maybe they want to go that route with the fact that they have some young pitchers. Who knows how many of them will be on the roster, whether they make a trade or not. Now, bringing back Senga, having money tied up in Manaea and Montas, who won't throw a pitch this year and will probably never pitch for the Mets again, doesn't mean they won't go out. I think part of them going status quo, maybe on the offensive positional player side, and again, this is all speculation. I'm trying to glean some stuff from Stearns' comments, is that they're going to invest in pitching. You've heard about Framber Valdez. That's a name that continues to come up a lot, I hear, connected to the Mets. Some of it is educated speculation, but I'm hearing a little bit that they like him as well. I thought Dylan Cease was a better option. Dylan Cease is a better option because he's possibly going to be more of a Blake Snell, San Francisco Giants opt-out, shorter-term contract, a lot of missed bats. I thought that would be a guy that would be a little bit more attractive, a little bit more upside to be an ace if all things come together, especially on a short-term deal. Can they go out and names like Mackenzie Gore, we talked about earlier in the offseason, finding that pitcher that could be in the right environment, the next elite arm, get him while he's on the way up and there's some control. Do they go that route? I could see that. The more I hear, and the more I hear around the league, the more I hear about Stearns talking, I just don't think a Tarik Skubal is going to be a realistic option. Not because the Mets can't get him. They have the prospect capital. I don't think they're going to be able to sign him before free agency. And you just can't rip apart your prospect capital, high-end prospect capital, to take that risk. Skeens is not going to be available. I'm not so sure about Alcantara. So I think you go in a different direction. And let's face it, if you want to spend payroll this offseason, and Diaz, at $240 million, Diaz and Alonso off the bat are going to add another $50 million to it. So you're probably at $290 already. You got another $60 million. With $60 million to round out the roster, there's going to be a lot of value coming out of that bullpen. There's going to be the ability to maybe get two arms. And much of that $60 million will be tied into a couple of arms. That's why maybe trading for a pitcher on the way up could be a very big part of it, where you sign one free agent, let's say a Valdez, something like $25 million. And then you go out and say, okay, can we take somebody like a Mackenzie Gore? I brought up George Kirby, Joe Ryan. Maybe the prospect capital will be painful, but not Tarik Skubal level painful, and incorporate them into this rotation. You have Christian Scott coming in. Whatever you have left after you trade, because to get any of these guys, you're going to have to trade one of your young arms, I would assume, and away you go. Now, one of the reasons why, and this is like the ultimate, I think, aha from the entire conference, is that he talked about Stearns, Carson Benge getting a chance to win the center field job in spring training. That's a declaration that a GM, President of Baseball Operations, would not make if it wasn't true. Now, Benge is, I talked about him on Sunday, highly regarded. And we'll dive a little bit later in the week into him. TJ Stats over at X has some process stats on him, and we'll compare how they, in the minor leagues through three levels, how they compare to big league hitters. That's for later in the week at Beyond the Mic for the premium content. But the fact that Stearns is out there putting that into the baseball universe, it's real. What does that mean? I don't think they're going to go out and sign a Harrison Bader to a two-year deal as a stopgap. I'm not so sure, unless Pete Alonso leaves, listening to that, Cody Bellinger's an option. Now, if Alonso leaves, that's off the table. Then they could go a couple of different directions there. And that it frees up about $30 million to do some other things. We're not there yet. And that's not the direction you want to go. I've never advocated that for day one. So what happens then? You go stopgap. You go Tyrone Taylor. You might go scrap heap value there. They probably, in a lot of ways, with a Taylor, with a Benge, and Taylor could spot Benge against a tough lefty, they probably feel comfortable with that. You know, you get the defense. If Benge fails and needs more time at AAA, you have a veteran in Taylor on a very reasonable deal in center field. I know that's not sexy, but if everybody else around him hits like they should, Beatty improves, Vientos improves at the DH, you got Alonso back. Soto is Soto. Nimmo is Nimmo. Alvarez continues to show that he's more the second half Alvarez. Got a lot of offense there. Lindor, let's not forget there. Now, the one thing he didn't really talk about, and the one area maybe that they could improve, and that'll also give them some payroll flexibility, and you could use some of that current $15 million to address maybe starting pitching, maybe some other aspects of the roster, is maybe you put Jeff McNeil out there, you trade him, and then you try to upgrade at second base via trade. Ketel Marte. Does that mean they're going to get more serious about Bo Bichette, even if they sign Pete Alonso? Think about it. You sign Diaz, you sign Alonso, you got this $60 million left. You spend it on free agents. Let's say you bring in Bo Bichette to play second base, and you bring in a Framber Valdez or a Dylan Cease. You're pretty much going to lop up the rest of that $60 million. I'm assuming they're going to be about the $340, $350. They're willing to pay the 110% tax. And then you round up the roster with your kids and component players and scrap heaps and things like that. And during the season, you make adjustments. Maybe that's an option. I think second base right now, listening to Stearns, if you want to know one area on the diamond, positionally, that they are willing to maybe change from this past year, it's second base. He talked about Beatty at third. He talked about Vientos, who's more of a DH. He's also third base, but more of a DH. Wants Pete back. Soto's going nowhere. I don't think they could trade Nimmo. They like Alvarez. I don't think Alvarez is going anywhere. Lindor's not going anywhere. Second base. It's a process of elimination. So you don't need a rumor mill to figure that one out. So that's where we're at. It was, again, I think there was some GM speak word salad for the first time with Stearns. But he gave you enough, and he usually always gives you something. And now I think we go into where he's just going to roll up his sleeves, and now the work starts. I don't think it gets hot and heavy until the winter meetings. I do think Diaz will be the first domino to fall. I don't think he's going to sit around until the winter meetings. I could be wrong. It will be a very interesting offseason, and I'll tell you what. If I'm reading the tea leaves after yesterday correctly, and the Mets are going to improve the roster, but not rip it apart, and still rely on the kids that we've seen here, for the last 3 years, 4 years, well, that's not going to sit well with the fans, and there will be some risk with that. Am I okay with that? I still don't know if we completely have an idea of how good some of these guys are. We've seen flashes of brilliance. We've seen flashes of bad. I've been a big critic of all of them. I do know that when you're at the kind of payroll the Mets are at with the uncertainty of the CBA, you're going to need more and more homegrown talent. They actually have that with Benj, with Jet Williams, Beatty and Vientos, and Alvarez is still going to be very cost-controlled, even as they head into arbitration years for the next couple of years, as Pete gets expensive. And you have a very expensive duo in Lindor and Soto. Look, two top 10 offensive players in the sport, they're going to make up a big chunk of your payroll. So second base makes sense. Running it back makes sense. They had a really good second half. It's not like it's a small sample size offensively. And if they improve the pitching, it covers up with some of the maybe offensive ebbs and flows this team goes through. Now, with a new coaching staff, and this is the part that none of us could really touch and feel because we're not in the back end. How much do these new coaches have an impact on the young players and helping the overall team, especially with situational hitting philosophy? We'll see. We'll see. I can't really comment on that, and I'm not so sure if they have success or failure. It's 100% on these coaches. But they do have, and they have indicated with the hirings and the type of people that they brought in, they're going to have an organization-wide philosophy, and that's not going to change. So, hope you enjoyed this Talking Mets short. We'll be back on Sunday working on some fun stuff. Don't want to talk about it now. Hoping to have that. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G. And, of course, on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Sign up for the premium content, less than a cup of coffee, the price of a cup of coffee a month, some free chat, some great Mets fans over there. We have lots of fun. And of course, keep up with the show, check out old shows. And as always, every Sunday we'll be back, and that won't change this Sunday. Until then, take care, everybody.
Meet the Mets. Head for the